What makes Jesus' Sermon on the Mount so challenging, yet relevant today? Welcome again to The Good Word. I'm Brant Berglund, your host and study guide author. We're continuing a 13-week series studying the Synoptic Gospel of Matthew, the first book of the New Testament. My conversation partners for this quarter are Troy Fitzgerald and Jennifer Ogden, pastors of the Walla Walla University Church. And as we've been talking about this the last couple weeks about the book of Matthew, we've been talking about a bit about the kingdom, the Messiah, the new coming king, and now we have the Sermon on the Mount. How does this fit in with the whole idea of kingship in Matthew, the whole idea of Messiah?
Well, if this is the Sermon on the Mount, if this is the revealing of God's will from the mountain, and it's not a mountain, really. I don't think it was. I mean, all my theological scholars here at Walla Walla tell me that it might have been a hill where this was delivered, but when you're going to write this up, you want it to seem like Mount Sinai. You want to give that Old Testament flavor. Here we'll hear the law, the ethics of the kingdom, the things that are truest to the heart of God. These are the things that the master teacher, the prophet like Moses, this is what the Messiah is going to deliver to people.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the main subjects here that he's going to talk about then? What matters to him?
Well, I think Jesus covers a number of things, but prominently displayed our treatment of others and our treatment of God. And he weaves in the treatment of ourselves. I mean, I think he's really concerned about our actions and our behaviors, but how they're related first and foremost to our connection with God, and then how that motivates us and connects us all.
And, you know, tacking on to that, it's what comes from the heart. Mm-hmm. That this law, that this word, that these rules, there are some pretty... I mean, if we were to keep these rules, if we were to live by this, we've got a different world that we're living in. But these are all from the heart. The word heart shows up in this section, these two chapters, three chapters, several times. But there's a genuineness that that Jesus is driving us towards.
You said that if we were to keep these principles, these laws, if we dare use that word for something as beautiful as the Sermon on the Mount, that it would change our world. When I think about a God, if I were a selfish type of God and I had minions who served me and I gave them commands, I would give commands that benefited me somehow. Bring me offerings, bring me tribute. Mm. This is not what I hear from this God, from this King. No. He wants us to treat others differently. Mm-hmm.
You look at the hurt in the world, you look at what's broken in the world, and apply these three chapters. Not trying to be sacrilegious, but if you had three chapters to apply to world rule, world life, you applied this across the board, people played it out from their heart, we wouldn't have the misery and the sadness. These target the heart of suffering and pain and loneliness, mm-hmm. isolation, and just hopelessness.
In fact, right at the very beginning, it says Jesus goes up on the mountainside and sits down. So again, we have this relation to the Old Testament Exodus story where Moses goes up on Sinai and receives the law from God. Jesus opens his mouth to speak, and out come these Beatitudes. We call them the Beatitudes. He starts with the word blessed or fortunate or happy, depending on how your English version translates it. But then he speaks to these people, those who are broken, who mourn, who cry, who are persecuted, who are poor. Why does he speak to those types of people and say that you're blessed if you're that way?
Hmm. How many people who are broken and poor and disheartened and trampled really feel like they're blessed? And to all of a sudden have your sorrow and your pain called out as something that could be really positive and reap rewards that are huge and beyond what you've ever thought were possible, it's completely mind-altering. It changes your perception, and it's wildly encouraging my life, the situation I'm in right now, could be a beautiful thing.
And maybe God is keying in on that experience, and he understands, and he's going through it, and he even thinks that it can work out for good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those people, I love what Jen was saying, and those people are the people of the kingdom. I mean, they get the virtues of the kingdom more than anyone else does. They know what matters, they know what things cost, they know what it's worth. These are special people to the kingdom. It's those who think that they're all right and don't have those experiences or try to resist those experiences in life, they end up avoiding some of the they end up avoiding the kingdom.
So the kingdom, really, if these are the beginning ethics of the kingdom is not a kingdom of utopian standards, perhaps, where everybody is wonderful and kind and treated with respect. Initially, it's a kingdom where those included are going through tough experiences. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, even Jesus says, persecuted for my name's sake. Part of a kingdom means that it's a kingdom that's going to revolutionize the world, and the world may not buy it. The world may resist it, and I might end up being at odds with even the people around me.
Yeah. I don't want to buy it. I mean, when you look at the list of experiences, those who mourn, I don't like that experience. I've done way too much of that lately.
Yeah.
Those aren't things that you aspire to. The other side of that is the things that people tend to aspire to, like happiness. Like when we try to chase down happiness, do we ever really get it? Can you go after peace? Can you go after joy? Are those things to pursue?
If I only had enough money or enough time or enough health.
So when those become the reference point by which you live your life by or chase value, then you end up being very disappointed on that journey. It's always a long journey, but it looks like from the Sermon on the Mount here, especially in the Beatitudes, that those things are, you know, the kingdom virtues, the beauties of the kingdom are byproducts of something else that you experience, that you don't walk away from, that you embrace as they come your way. And that causes those things to transcend everything else. It's weird.
But it changes everything about how we think about our world. The things that used to be the negatives, now I don't see entirely as negative. But that sets us up then. For Jesus approaching, if we've talked about how this book was written for a Jewish audience, if that's the case, then we approach the Old Testament law with a new mindset. We approach it from an experience of hurt and injury, perhaps, of being an outcast even. And Jesus then comes and says, look, you've heard that it was said a number of times. He says, you've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. If someone hits you on the right cheek, you hit him back on the right cheek. If someone takes your car, you take their car. But you've heard that said. But then Jesus turns and says, turn the other cheek. If someone hits you on the right cheek, turn the other one also. Jesus says, you've heard it said, you shall not commit adultery, but I say to you, if anyone looks at a woman lustfully, he has committed adultery in his heart already. Jesus speaks about the heart over and over. Mm-hmm. How is this a transformation of the Old Testament law, or is it? Is Jesus giving a new law here?
I think he's really helping us understand what the law meant in the first place. I mean, through time and history and the silence of 400 years in between the two testaments, there's been some grave misunderstandings that have come. And I think he's helping clarify what it really means to have God's kingdom at hand.
Yeah, I mean, the 400 years, when the first law came, it was 400 years of slavery by the time the law came. These people who received the first law, don't do this and don't do that, they were emotional, intellectual, even spiritual infants. They were two-year-olds in a way. Don't do this, don't do that. And it was pretty severe. This is an amplification. This is what it looks like in the flesh. This is what I meant by putting it in your heart. Mm-hmm. So in a way, he's just fleshing that out.
He's amplifying its motivations, its deepest resonance in the human life. So it doesn't matter so much then what I do outwardly. What matters is what's in my heart. Is that what you're saying, or is that not quite it?
You're so tricky.
I think that our outward actions absolutely matter, but it's not the only thing that matters, and that's what Christ is saying. It's not the only thing that matters. Your heart matters most of all, and what is in your heart is going to show up in your actions.
So if my mom or dad tell me, go apologize to your brother, and I say, I'm sorry. Does the outward action matter? It matters, right? But what matters more is that just maybe, what if I'm really sorry, and I can tell my brother, oh man, I wish I hadn't done that. And Jesus is saying what matters is what's inside. Mm-hmm. So then it comes out on the outside. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to another topic then, with that as a groundwork. You both had mentioned this idea of judging and how we judge others and ultimately how we love one another. Mm-hmm. What does Jesus suggest about judging? Where does he go with that?
Wait for Jen to say, don't.
Don't do it.
And doesn't that fit with today's world?
It is the, in my opinion, as I've observed this little world that I live in, being not judgmental is the primary virtue of Western culture today. There's nothing more important than it. Honesty, integrity, kindness, none of those things matter more than being non-judgmental. I think the definition of what that means, however, is different than perhaps maybe what Jesus was saying. I think when we say non-judgmental, we just mean don't ever disagree with anyone.
Or don't call anything wrong.
Yeah, don't do that. Mm-hmm.
What was Jesus addressing? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think he's talking about this idea of condemnation, people who are worthy of the kingdom. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, we have this very legalistic idea that I can earn the kingdom if I'm good enough, my exterior behavior is good enough, I merit heaven, I can go in, the door is open for me because I was good. But there's a competitiveness to that that says, if I make it into heaven, it's because I was better than someone else. And Jesus is saying, no, that's not true. My door is open wide for everyone who wants to come in.
Heaven is graded on a curve and God only takes the top 20%.
Yeah. I'm going to quote your students. Quote that to your students.
But the point is that everyone wins in God's kingdom. Everyone has access to it, where we create these structures within our culture that says, if you judge me, you're worse. If you're cruel and unkind, you're worse.
But what if I'm judged by the same characteristics by which I judge others? Oh,
yeah, that gets painful. And I think that's part of the problem, is that when we judge somebody else, we're so short-sighted. The imagery here, we don't have a lot of time for it, but just think about the speck and the log in the eye. Mm-hmm. Think about what happens when you get something in your eye. You can't see. It doesn't matter how small or large it is. A speck in your eye obscures your whole vision.
Yeah.
You just can't do it. And so I think it's interesting, but it's also important to note here that Jesus, this is not just I'm going to leave you alone and you leave me alone. He says, no. He says, this is how you do it. First, take the speck out of your own eye, or the log out of your own eye. Then you will see clearly to help your brother, your sister with their issue. It doesn't mean we leave each other alone. It doesn't mean we deny what's going on. Mm-hmm. It means the one person who can help you the most is the one who's bathed deeply in the mercy and grace of God.
Mm-hmm. Jesus concludes the Sermon on the Mount with some words about learning how to love. Jen, you had a quote. Would you read that for us? I think it was helpful.
Well, it is. It says, everyone says love hurts, but that's not true. Loneliness hurts, rejection hurts, losing someone hurts, envy hurts, and everyone gets those confused with love. But in reality, love is the only thing in this world that covers up all the pain.
And in the end, Matthew tells us that Jesus' words were, love your neighbor, love one another as God loves us, even loving our enemies. Next week, we're going to take a look at Jesus' faith, his healing, his command to get up and walk. My thanks to Pastors Jen and Troy, and my thanks also to David Olson and Jared Miller, our program engineers, and to all of you who are listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Brant Berglund.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.